National System of Assessment of Foreign Language Proficiency, Level B2. The listening paper consists of four parts. In each part, you will hear the recordings twice. In each part, there will be time for you to look at the questions before you hear the recordings. You can write your answers on the test booklet. At the end of the test, you will need to copy your answers to the answer sheet. Now turn to part one. You will listen to people talking in six different situations. For questions 1 through 6, choose the best answer, A, B, or C. You have 30 seconds to look at the questions. Now we are ready to begin.
1.
Hi, Jane. Do you have a moment?
Mm-hmm.
We're considering Sophia for the new sales job. How would you describe her qualities?
Sophia? Ooh, that's a difficult one. Well, her strengths are that she works hard and gets on well with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
She tends to want everything to happen straight away. That's a fault. She needs to think things through more sometimes. A lack of experience, I'd say.
Right.
And I suppose she needs to be tougher at times. She needs to be better at telling people what she thinks. But she's just such a kind and thoughtful person that, well, she's too worried about upsetting someone, isn't she?
Hi, Jane. Do you have a moment?
Mm-hmm.
We're considering Sophia for the new sales job. How would you describe her qualities?
Sophia? Ooh, that's a difficult one. Well, her strengths are that she works hard and gets on well with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
She tends to want everything to happen straight away. That's a fault. She needs to think things through more sometimes. A lack of experience, I'd say.
Right.
And I suppose she needs to be tougher at times. She needs to be better at telling people what she thinks. But she's just such a kind and thoughtful person that, well, she's too worried about upsetting someone, isn't she?
2.
Oh, Tim, you don't look well. How are you feeling?
Oh, awful. I was sick this morning. My throat really hurts when I swallow, or speak even, and I just can't keep anything down. I've got red spots all over my chest, and it feels like somebody's trying to break into my head with a hammer. My head really aches, but it's not as if I've got a high temperature or streaming cold. I reckon I've had some sort of allergic reaction to something.
Oh, Tim, you don't look well. How are you feeling?
Oh, awful. I was sick this morning. My throat really hurts when I swallow, or speak even, and I just can't keep anything down. I've got red spots all over my chest, and it feels like somebody's trying to break into my head with a hammer. My head really aches. But it's not as if I've got a high temperature or streaming cold. I reckon I've had some sort of allergic reaction to something.
3.
What will you do if it rains tomorrow, Helen?
Come straight back home, I suppose. But it's hardly likely, is it? Not after the spell of weather we've been having. Mind you, I heard that it isn't going to be quite such a scorcher as today.
What will you do if it rains tomorrow, Helen?
Come straight back home, I suppose. But it's hardly likely, is it? Not after the spell of weather we've been having. Mind you, I heard that it isn't going to be quite such a scorcher as today.
4.
What clothes did you wear when you were younger, Ben?
Oh, I've never been very fashionable. I used to wear terrible jeans that didn't fit me and tight patterned shirts.
Mm.
But I did once have a leather jacket that all my friends used to love. I look quite stylish in it, apparently.
What clothes did you wear when you were younger, Ben?
Oh, I've never been very fashionable. I used to wear terrible jeans that didn't fit me and tight patterned shirts.
Mm.
But I did once have a leather jacket that all my friends used to love. I look quite stylish in it, apparently.
5.
I heard you were delayed for 6 hours at the airport, Chris. It must have been awful.
No kidding. Try entertaining 3 little kids at an airport with 2 coffee shops.
Mm.
Fortunately, they slept a bit, so we didn't get all that moaning you get when they're exhausted. But it was really boring for them. And for me. Not only that, but there were no announcements, so I was a bit scared we might miss the flight.
I heard you were delayed for 6 hours at the airport, Chris. It must have been awful.
No kidding. Try entertaining 3 little kids at an airport with 2 coffee shops.
Mm.
Fortunately, they slept a bit, so we didn't get all that moaning you get when they're exhausted. But it was really boring for them. And for me. Not only that, but there were no announcements, so I was a bit scared we might miss the flight.
6.
Oh, I can't find my keys anywhere.
I wish you'd listened to me and put them on the kitchen table when you got out of the car last night.
Well, I didn't, did I?
Okay. Have you looked in your coat? You might have left them there.
Oh, hang on. I'll have a look. I reckon you're right. Yeah. Here they are. It's because I never wear this leather jacket. I must have slipped them in the pocket as I was getting out of the car. Oh, I can't find my keys anywhere.
I wish you'd listened to me and put them on the kitchen table when you got out of the car last night.
Well, I didn't, did I?
Okay. Have you looked in your coat? You might have left them there.
Oh, hang on. I'll have a look. I reckon you're right. Yeah. Here they are. It's because I never wear this leather jacket. I must have slipped them in the pocket as I was getting out of the car.
This is the end of part one. Now turn to part two. You will hear a dialogue. For questions 11 through 16, decide if the following statements agree with the information from the conversation. You have 30 seconds to look at the questions. Now we are ready to begin.
Hello, come in and take a seat.
Oh, thanks.
Good. And how can I help you?
Well, I'd quite like to join this international social club, and I was hoping you could help me.
Yes, no problem. Let me just get the form up on my screen, and I'll fill in your details. Let's see. Yes, here we are. Okay, the first thing we need is your name.
Jenny Fu. That's F-O-O.
Okay, great. And can you tell me how old you are, Jenny?
I'm 21.
Great. And how long have you been here in Australia, by the way?
I arrived just last month, 2 weeks before the start of the academic year, just to sort things out and settle in a bit.
Good idea. Where are you from originally?
I'm from Kuala Lumpur. That's where I was born and brought up.
So you're Malaysian, are you?
That's right. Though I lived in the United States for a couple of years when I was a teenager. We went there for my father's job.
Right. And can you tell me your current address, please?
Sure. Just at the moment, I'm lodging with a family at 13 Anglesey Road in Bondi.
Okay, let me just type that in. How do you spell Anglesey, by the way?
It's spelled A-N-G-L-E-S-E-A.
Thanks. That's quite a long way from the city centre, isn't it? Is it a problem getting into the city centre?
Not really, because the buses are good and it's a nice, quiet area to live in.
That's true. So I guess you must have a cell phone number you can give me so we can keep you informed of events and so on.
Yes. Let me just have a look. It's a new one, so I haven't learned the number yet. Ah, here it is. It's 040
422-9160.
422-9160. Okay, good. And you like the family you're living with?
Sure. They've got a little boy who is quite noisy, but he's really no trouble.
Fine. Now, let's see, what's next? Yep. Can you tell me what you do? I mean, are you working or studying?
Well, at the moment, I'm doing a temporary job with a company here in Sydney. I'm an economist, in fact.
Okay. And how long do you think you'll be here in Sydney?
At least a year. I may look for work here afterwards.
Great. Now, you want to join the International Social Club, and it will be good to know a bit about your free time interests as well. What do you like doing?
Well, I'm quite musical, and I really enjoy singing.
Mm-hmm.
Back home, I sang with a band, just, you know, for fun. But for me, what I like best is dancing. You know, the modern sort? I really love it.
So, how are you getting on here? I mean, your level of English is better than most people who come from overseas to work. And you've got a really nice American accent, so I don't suppose you have any communication problems in the office. Though you might find some of our Australian slang more difficult to understand.
Well, a bit. But I haven't met that many Australians yet, outside of work, I mean.
Right.
But could you tell me a bit about the International Club now I've joined?
Sure. We've got, currently about 50 members, but people join all the time, so I should think that figure will go up. Last year, we had 30 members, and the year before, just 18. So we're growing and getting better known. I reckon that at this rate, next year, we'll have about 80.
And does the club hold regular meetings?
Yes, every second Thursday evening, in fact, so a couple of times a month. Though, of course, when you start making friends, you'll be getting together with them more often than that, I guess. The next meeting will be next Thursday, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, that's right.
And what happens when the club meets? I mean, what sort of things are organised?
The usual thing is for one of the members to give a little presentation about where they're from, their customs and so on. But from time to time, they do other things, outings to places around Sydney, or meeting up to eat together in a restaurant, or go to a concert together, or something like that.
Okay, that sounds fun. And the members aren't just people from other countries? Non-Australians, are they?
No, not at all. The main point of the club is to give people like you the chance to mix in more with people from this country. People of all ages. You'll find us very friendly. I think the contact has a positive effect on visitors to this country. And in fact, it affects us locals positively as well. You know, it's a sort of intercultural experience for everybody. And, of course, you should get the chance to do all sorts of activities with other members of the club if you want to. It's not just for talking. And hopefully you'll make friends with people who have similar interests.
It sounds great. I'm really looking forward to the first meeting.
Now listen again.
Hello. Come in and take a seat.
Oh, thanks.
Good. And how can I help you?
Well, I'd quite like to join this International Social Club, and I was hoping you could help me.
Yes, no problem. Let me just get the form up on my screen, and I'll fill in your details. Let's see. Yes, here we are. Okay, the first thing we need is your name.
Jenny Fu. That's F-O-O.
Okay, great. And can you tell me how old you are, Jenny?
I'm 21.
Great. And how long have you been here in Australia, by the way?
I arrived just last month, 2 weeks before the start of the academic year, just to sort things out and settle in a bit.
Good idea. Where are you from originally?
I'm from Kuala Lumpur. That's where I was born and brought up.
So you're Malaysian, are you?
That's right. Though I lived in the United States for a couple of years when I was a teenager. We went there for my father's job.
Right. And can you tell me your current address, please?
Sure. Just at the moment, I'm lodging with a family at 13 Anglesey Road in Bondi.
Okay, let me just type that in. 30, How do you spell Anglesey, by the way?
It's spelled A-N-G-L-E-S-E-A.
Thanks. That's quite a long way from the city centre, isn't it? Is it a problem getting into the city centre?
Not really, because the buses are good and it's a nice, quiet area to live in.
That's true. So I guess you must have a cell phone number you can give me so we can keep you informed of events and so on.
Yes. Let me just have a look. It's a new one, so I haven't learned the number yet. Ah, here it is. It's 040-422-9160.
422-9160. Okay, good. And you like the family you're living with?
Sure. They've got a little boy who is quite noisy, but he's really no trouble.
Fine. Now, let's see, what's next? Yep. Can you tell me what you do? I mean, are you working or studying?
Well, at the moment, I'm doing a temporary job with a company here in Sydney. I'm an economist, in fact.
Okay. And how long do you think you'll be here in Sydney?
At least a year. I may look for work here afterwards.
Great. Now, you want to join the International Social Club, and it will be good to know a bit about your free time interests as well. What do you like doing?
Well, I'm quite musical, and I really enjoy singing.
Mm-hmm.
Back home, I sang with a band, just, you know, for fun. But for me, what I like best is dancing. You know, the modern sort? I really love it.
So, how are you getting on here? I mean, your level of English is better than most people who come from overseas to work. And you've got a really nice American accent, so I don't suppose you have any communication problems in the office. Though you might find some of our Australian slang more difficult to understand.
Well, a bit. But I haven't met that many Australians yet, outside of work, I mean.
Right.
But could you tell me a bit about the International Club now I've joined?
Sure. We've got, currently about 50 members, but people join all the time, so I should think that figure will go up. Last year, we had 30 members, and the year before, just 18. So we're growing and getting better known. I reckon that at this rate, next year, we'll have about 80.
And does the club hold regular meetings?
Yes, every second Thursday evening, in fact, so a couple of times a month. Though, of course, when you start making friends, you'll be getting together with them more often than that, I guess. The next meeting will be next Thursday, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, that's right.
And what happens when the club meets? I mean, what sort of things are organised?
The usual thing is for one of the members to give a little presentation about where they're from, their customs and so on. But from time to time, they do other things, outings to places around Sydney, or meeting up to eat together in a restaurant, or go to a concert together, or something like that.
Okay, that sounds fun. And the members aren't just people from other countries, non-Australians, are they?
No, not at all. The main point of the club is to give people like you the chance to mix in more with people from this country, people of all ages. You'll find us very friendly. I think the contact has a positive effect on visitors to this country. And in fact, it affects us locals positively as well. You know, it's a sort of intercultural experience for everybody. And, of course, you should get the chance to do all sorts of activities with other members of the club if you want to. It's not just for talking. And hopefully you'll make friends with people who have similar interests.
It sounds great. I'm really looking forward to the first meeting.
This is the end of part two. Now turn to part three. You will hear an interview. For questions 17 through 22, choose the best answer. A, B, or C. You have 30 seconds to look at the questions. Now we are ready to begin.
Hello, everybody. Here we are with our weekly program about education in America. Today, we're looking at international students attending colleges and universities in the USA. Here is our expert, Jane Brown, an aide to the president of the Institute of International Education.
Good afternoon.
So, Jane, how many international students are coming to the States to study?
A new report says there are more and more of them. In particular, it notes a large increase in the number of international students from China. These findings are from the latest edition of the Open Doors Report, which is a joint project of the State Department and the Institute of International Education, a nonprofit educational and training organization. It documents the record number of international students in the United States during the 2011-2012 school year. It says that more than 750,000 international students were attending American colleges and universities during that period. That represents an increase of almost 6% compared to 1 year earlier.
What about Americans? Are they also studying abroad in bigger numbers?
Well, by comparison, the number of Americans studying overseas increased by just 1%.
You say many international students in America come from China?
The report says about 200,000 students at American colleges and universities were from China. That is an increase of more than 23% over the year before. That was the highest level ever, and it really showed in the figures. It also means that international undergraduate enrollment was higher than graduate enrollment.
Do you have any explanation for this trend?
Many Chinese families can pay for the highest quality education for their children. We know many of them have enough income to afford to send their children anywhere in the world. And for the most part, with all the options they have, Chinese students still choose the United States as their destination of choice.
Good for us. Any other interesting facts about the statistics of international education in America?
Chinese students are not the only ones attending American colleges and universities in large numbers. After China, India sends the second largest number of students to the United States for higher education. And South Korea is the third with about 80,000 students.
So why do so many foreign students want to study in the United States?
I believe the advantage America has is that we have a very diverse system. At the same time, there are over 4,000 universities and colleges in the United States. And what that tells us is that there is a lot of room to host international students. The number I've just provided you may seem huge, but actually, foreign students represent less than 4% of the total student population in American higher education.
Does this mean there is still a lot of room for international students to come to us?
Exactly.
Thank you, Jane.
Now listen again.
Hello, everybody. Here we are with our weekly program about education in America. Today, we're looking at international students attending colleges and universities in the USA. Here is our expert, Jane Brown, an aide to the president of the Institute of International Education.
Good afternoon.
So, Jane, how many international students are coming to the States to study?
A new report says there are more and more of them. In particular, it notes a large increase in the number of international students from China. These findings are from the latest edition of the Open Doors Report, which is a joint project of the State Department and the Institute of International Education, a nonprofit educational and training organization. It documents the record number of international students in the United States during the 2011-2012 school year. It says that more than 750,000 international students were attending American colleges and universities during that period. That represents an increase of almost 6% compared to 1 year earlier.
What about Americans? Are they also studying abroad in bigger numbers?
Well, by comparison, the number of Americans studying overseas increased by just 1%.
You say many international students in America come from China?
The report says about 200,000 students at American colleges and universities were from China. That is an increase of more than 23% over the year before. That was the highest level ever, and it really showed in the figures. It also means that international undergraduate enrollment was higher than graduate enrollment.
Do you have any explanation for this trend?
Many Chinese families can pay for the highest quality education for their children. We know many of them have enough income to afford to send their children anywhere in the world. And for the most part, with all the options they have, Chinese students still choose the United States as their destination of choice.
Good for us. Any other interesting facts about the statistics of international education in America?
Chinese students are not the only ones attending American colleges and universities in large numbers. After China, India sends the second largest number of students to the United States for higher education. And South Korea is the third with about 80,000 students.
So why do so many foreign students want to study in the United States?
I believe the advantage America has is that we have a very diverse system. At the same time, there are over 4,000 universities and colleges in the United States. And what that tells us is that there is a lot of room to host international students. The number I've just provided you may seem huge, but actually foreign students represent less than 4% of the total student population in American higher education.
Does this mean there is still a lot of room for international students to come to us?
Exactly.
Thank you, Jane.
This is the end of part 3. Now turn to part 4. You will hear part of a lecture. For questions 23 through 30, choose the best answer, A, B, or C. You have 30 seconds to look at the questions.
Good morning, everyone. As you know, we're continuing with the part of the textile course where we look at some different types of stitching or stitching techniques. And today, we're looking at one that comes from Japan. It's called sashiko. Now, what does that word mean? Well, it translates as little stitches. And in its modern form, you can see from these pictures, it produces a very beautiful decorative design on things like cushions, curtains, and quilted covers, all produced by hand, of course, and many sold in shops these days. But sashiko began long ago, and its Japanese origins were much more functional than this. It started among farming communities in mountain villages in the north of Japan's main island. Centuries ago, transport was difficult in these places, and the bitter climate made it hard to grow fibre plants for spinning and weaving into warm cloth. Also, there were no sheep in Japan at this time, so no wool either. And this meant that people were left with a locally produced material called asa that was hard wearing but not very warm. So what they did was to dye this local fabric blue because the dye was thought to strengthen the fibres. And they solved the problem of warmth by stitching together many layers of this cloth. In this way, they produced clothes that were warm, but not too bulky. It was done with a white, heavy thread, So there were many shades of blue cloth, light and dark, and white stitching. And so a typical look or image was created, like this. They used designs based on traditional Japanese patterns that had their own names, such as sea wave, perhaps to reflect the wavy effect of the design. Here's another example. Now, each garment that was made at this time was planned for a specific purpose. So, for example, waistcoats were heavily stitched on the back and shoulders if they were going to be worn while carrying heavy baskets. And it wasn't only country people who relied on sashiko clothing. In Japanese towns, firemen dressed for duty in sashiko-stitched garments, jackets, trousers, hoods and gloves, which were soaked with water to protect them. So, the point here is that sashiko clothing was essential for survival at one time. And even though making things in this way took up many hours for people who also had to work, do household tasks and so on, it was a vital skill. The wife of someone like a farmer, for instance, had to spend time making clothes, and she would do the stitching without a frame or structural support. And the garments, once you put them on, were flexible and moulded themselves to the wearer. If you look at a genuine sashiko garment today, then you can see the evidence of wear and get a feel for the shape of the wearer's body, which is fascinating. Then, in 1895, traditional life changed, and sashiko was no longer necessary because rail travel reached northern Japan, and warm textiles could then be imported. However, since the 1970s, sashiko has been revived in Japan and has also been taken up by quilters and embroiderers in the USA and the UK. Nowadays, the designs are a little different. There are vertical and horizontal stripes, for example, or the stitches can be arranged to produce a diamond effect. Here we are. Similar fabrics to those used traditionally can be found in modern furnishing or dressmaking departments or from suppliers, so that the traditional appearance of a sashiko item has been maintained. Now, there are exhibitions of ancient sashiko items, but the disappointing thing is this. While old pots and ceramics are considered to be treasures and preserved even with cracks, ancient garments made by poor village women have not been given such a high value. And, sadly, many of them have been thrown away, rather than getting the attention of collectors. This is a pity, because they say a great deal about how people once lived and about their technical skill. And it's no coincidence that sashiko has now become a pastime on an international level.
Now listen again.
Good morning, everyone. As you know, we're continuing with the part of the textile course where we look at some different types of stitching or stitching techniques. And today, we're looking at one that comes from Japan. It's called sashiko. Now, what does that word mean? Well, it translates as little stitches. And in its modern form, you can see from these pictures, it produces a very beautiful decorative design on things like cushions, curtains, and quilted covers, all produced by hand, of course, and many sold in shops these days. But sashiko began long ago, and its Japanese origins were much more functional than this. It started among farming communities in mountain villages in the north of Japan's main island. Centuries ago, transport was difficult in these places, and the bitter climate made it hard to grow fiber plants for spinning and weaving into warm cloth. Also, there were no sheep in Japan at this time, so no wool either. And this meant that people were left with a locally produced material called asa that was hard wearing but not very warm. So what they did was to dye this local fabric blue, because the dye was thought to strengthen the fibers. And they solved the problem of warmth by stitching together many layers of this cloth. In this way, they produced clothes that were warm, but not too bulky. It was done with a white, heavy thread, so there were many shades of blue cloth, light and dark, and white stitching. And so a typical look or image was created, like this. They used designs based on traditional Japanese patterns that had their own names, such as sea wave, perhaps to reflect the wavy effect of the design. Here's another example. Now, each garment that was made at this time was planned for a specific purpose. So, for example, waistcoats were heavily stitched on the back and shoulders if they were going to be worn while carrying heavy baskets. And it wasn't only country people who relied on sashiko clothing. In Japanese towns, firemen dressed for duty in sashiko-stitched garments, jackets, trousers, hoods and gloves, which were soaked with water to protect them. So the point here is that sashiko clothing was essential for survival at one time. And even though making things in this way took up many hours for people who also had to work, do household tasks and so on, it was a vital skill. The wife of someone like a farmer, for instance, had to spend time making clothes, and she would do the stitching without a frame or structural support. And the garments, once you put them on, were flexible and moulded themselves to the wearer. If you look at a genuine sashiko garment today, then you can see the evidence of wear and get a feel for the shape of the wearer's body, which is fascinating. Then, in 1895, traditional life changed, and sashiko was no longer necessary because rail travel reached northern Japan, and warm textiles could then be imported. However, since the 1970s, sashiko has been revived in Japan and has also been taken up by quilters and embroiderers in the USA and the UK. Nowadays, the designs are a little different. There are vertical and horizontal stripes, for example, or the stitches can be arranged to produce a diamond effect. Here we are. Similar fabrics to those used traditionally can be found in modern furnishing or dressmaking departments or from suppliers, so that the traditional appearance of a sashiko item has been maintained. Now, there are exhibitions of ancient sashiko items, But the disappointing thing is this. While old pots and ceramics are considered to be treasures and preserved even with cracks, ancient garments made by poor village women have not been given such a high value. And, sadly, many of them have been thrown away, rather than getting the attention of collectors. This is a pity, because they say a great deal about how people once lived and about their technical skill. And it's no coincidence that sashiko has now become a pastime on an international level.
This is the end of the listening test.